This week on the podcast, we find out whether or not it's Crystallis or Crystallis on It So Bad. And welcome, Chris.
How are you? Hello. I'm Chris. Just Chris.
Mark, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, no problem. It's our pleasure to have you this week as we add Crystallis, which I think we've decided is what the title of the game is, from an advertisement that Chris found.
Yeah,
Chris, Where'd you find that?
I went down to my local library and accessed my local library's computers and, you know, did some research on the site called YouTube and typed in Crystallis and found a commercial. Or, sorry, Crystallis. And found an old commercial.
Cool. Yeah. We're adding this week Crystallis to the Endless List, which is our list of games. Currently goes from Super Mario 64. Or at number one, all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser at number 103. It's our 104th game we're adding to the Endless List. Last week we added Zombies Ate My Neighbors at number 70 to the Endless List. And yes, this is our list of every game. As we add more and more games to this ever-growing list, it will be eventually encompass literally every game. Because we're going to live forever if we play every game all time ever. That's what's going to happen, right?
We're going to outpace games. That's what we're going to do.
So, Mark, you chose this game. Why did you pick Crystallis? Because I'll tell you what, Chris and I were talking about Crystallis not that long before you made the suggestion to play Crystallis. So, what made you choose Crystallis in particular?
It's one of my favorite NES titles growing up. The game kind of hit the sweet spot with me when I was 13 years old when it came out, 14 years old. It has like the fantasy aspect to it of magic and swords. And it also has the sci-fi aspect of it because, you know, it takes place 100 years after that fateful year of 1997 when the world ends. So those combined with some simple RPG elements, just it really hit that spot for me. And I've just gone back to it so many times, and it just seemed like a good game that's not super popular, but it does have kind of a cult following. So I don't know. It seems to fall in that same vein as, say, River City Ransom or DuckTales, you know, games that aren't probably in your top 10 list of NES games when you think of the NES, but quality games.
Yeah, I find this game super interesting. It came out in 1990, and I think very shortly after this is when SNK started work on the Neo Geo. So this is like one of their last games before they went ham and just started producing a lot of Neo Geo content. So this is like early days of SNK. SNK developed this game and published it in 1990. Same year as Phantasy Star 2, Bonk's Adventures, Super Mario World came out in Japan in 1990. And also Ease Book 1 and 2 came out on the TurboGrafx-16 CD that same year. And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting game. Did you play this on original hardware, NES, or did you play this on the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection?
I played it on the Switch.
Okay.
With but I have I'm fickle for playing with original controllers that it was designed to play on. So I have those NES wireless controllers.
Is it on the NES collection that they have on the Switch, or is it only on the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection?
It's on the NES collection. It's on the SNK 40th collection. And neat thing about the SNK 40th collection is you don't have to play it if you don't want to. You can watch Frank Cifaldi's playthrough on that SNK 40th collection. There's an automatic playthrough option on that game, and where you can just stop it at any point and take over.
Yeah, it's super cool. And I saw a tweet from Frank Cifaldi like a couple days ago that he was the guy that played through it. Chris, I don't know if you know who Frank Cifaldi is, but he's like the preeminent video game historian, and
he's
the guy who runs the Video Game History Foundation. And he is seems to be a fucking cool dude. So he worked for the company that made the SK 40th anniversary collection, and he's the guy that did all the playthroughs. And he was mentioning on his Twitter that when he did the playthroughs, he was trying to showcase game mechanics that would help you on your way. So like doing certain things and how you did them and showcasing what the game was while he played through it. But yeah, the cool thing about that is you can watch it play through the entire game and take over whenever you want. In the SNK 40th anniversary collection.
Oh, really? That's a pretty cool feature. So you played the NES port that's on the Switch, right?
Yeah, the SNK 40th anniversary collection.
Okay, so that's the same thing. Okay, gotcha. I bought it on eBay for a whopping $18 and played it on my AVS with my original Nintendo controller that I got in probably 1988. So that was fun.
See, I played this a couple years ago. I was like dicking around with it. I played like 3 or 4 hours of it, and then I don't know, like something else distracted me on the NES. So I think I got as far as beating the swamp dungeon in that run through. But then I was distracted and played something. So this time I did make my way through this, and Mark, I'll have you know that I played this game over the course of Sunday and yesterday and played almost 3/4 of the game in that time because I was unemployed previously. I am employed now.
you beat it.
It's not a long game, and I think the shortness of the game kind of is a strength of it compared to some of the games nowadays. It's kind of short and sweet and hits all its points. I don't think the game finishes very strong, but it starts off really strong with little side quests you go on for people like getting a flute to wake someone up or finding the dwarf child in that swamp forest. If you look at this game from where it was in 1990, you can really see where that's where RPGs from nowadays came from. You can see like roots of a game, even like something like The Witcher 3, you can see where that led to where we are today.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, or like even games like Dark Souls, who've said that they're inspired by games like Zelda. They are, you know, an action RPG is the base of it. It's pretty cool that it was a twist with the whole futuristic aspect of it. Although I wish they included more of that in terms of like more futuristic elements, but it's a little different, it's not your standard RPG, I would say, action RPG.
Yeah, I agree because it's I've always kind of wanted to play this game, and I was actually glad that it was suggested Mark for this because I've been wanting to play it for a while because I like RPGs, especially retro RPGs and action RPGs, and It was even not having the context of playing it when I was like growing up when it first came out, like there wasn't a lot of like dystopian future like RPG themed games like back then. Most everything was kind of fantasy based or it's just sci-fi based, and it's like just exists like in some sort of dystopian future. Like the fact that you had like the premise of it being like, you know, the world ends like in an apocalyptic war in like the mid-90s, and like that now, like I don't want to say like regress, but humanity has kind of gone to like more like a fantasy setting. But then it's like by the end of the game, you kind of get back to like this area with like robots and future technology and stuff like that. Really like interesting concept for what was going on. I mean, I don't think there's any other Nintendo RPGs that kind of cover that sort of thematic shift like that, at least I can't think of off the top of my head.
No, I can't think of any off the top of my head either. It's an interesting game. So as we mentioned, it's a post-apocalyptic world. You awake as, I guess you were frozen back in the day. Is that what happened in 1997? You were frozen. You as the protagonist, is that correct?
You and the girl Myra.
Mesa is what I think what it is. Messia, yes.
Yeah, Messia. And you were both frozen to be reawakened when the tower was turned back on. So that tower in the sky, when that gets turned back on, that signaled the cryogenic storage. It never uses those words, but I'm going to use them. That you and Messia are in. And you both wake up and you catch up to her kind of halfway through the story. And the game really has a, without like, I guess without like deep dialogue in the story, there's a lot of really key elements that happen. Like there's that part before you go to Dragonia Castle when you're in what is it, town of Goa, when everybody gets killed. There's like a real red wedding moment.
And yeah, the emperor comes down, and I think it's not Goa.
Oh yeah,
it's Chiron.
It's the town before. It's like Sharon. Yeah, Sharon or Chiron. Yeah.
Yeah, and the emperor comes in and mows everybody down, and you have to fight the emperor in the temple.
Back in those days, or whatever, there really wasn't moments in games like that where you had a lot of the main characters just get slaughtered in one fell swoop or one moment like that. I mean, most of the games back then were, you know, they were your typical story. You know, you got your heroes, you had your hero party. They went through a middle area, a middle part of the story where everybody went through a tragic thing, and then everybody came out on top at the end, overcoming the bad guy. And that really kind of hit me when I was younger. You know, it's like this is different. This is a different take on what we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, there's even that moment before that where you have to go past the zombie town, and then you beat a dungeon area, and you get up, and the zombie town's been saved because you saved everybody, and that changes the town and the environment. But I do like in Chiron where when you walk up to the people that are dead, they just say, "He's dead." The text box. Just like, he's dead.
Yeah. It's true. Like, it's like basically every like notable NPC you have met to that point gets like wiped out like in one scene for the most part. And then even slightly before that, I think it's not Mount Hydra, the other mountain you go to.
Like, Saber.
Saber, yes. Yeah, Saber. Thank you. It's like actually the death that hit me the most in this game was that random dude who like went to Mount Saber to go like collecting jewels, and then like you find him like at the foot of Mount Saber and he's like dying, and I was like, oh man, that would actually really bummed me out for some reason. Almost more so than like the whole town getting wiped out. I don't know.
I think that's the first point in the game where your silent protagonist actually says something too, when that guy on Mount Saber dies. Because there's like, I think there's only like 4 points in the whole game where your main character says something.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's a reference to me ranting about how much I do not like silent protagonists in games.
Yes, it
I
is.
I feel like, okay, you do listen to the show quite a bit. Very good. But
I do.
But he says enough to not be a silent protagonist in my book. So I was
at the end, especially. At the end, especially, you start talking a lot.
Listen, you know, it's completely fine to be a hero of few words. It's not okay to be a silent protagonist. A hero of few words is character development to me.
So we haven't talked much about the actual what the gameplay is like. So it's very much like a Zelda game, but you have experience points and you level up. So when you level up, you increase your health, you increase your attack power, crazier defense stats. So it's very much an action RPG. You also get spells. So there's 8 different spells in the game. I typically use refresh. I teleport a lot. I use recover a lot. but I think and there was a key moment so you had to use change. But besides that, I don't think I used a lot. Like paralysis, I never used.
Yeah, other than when the story forced you to. That's the only time we used paralysis.
Right. Yeah, there was cryptic moments where it's like you need to. Well, there were some moments where you'll talk to somebody and he's like, "Huh, I remember Dom, and you know he was a guy." So you know to change into him, and then there's some moments where it's just kind of guessing that you have to change into certain guys in order to get. Make certain events happen. So that was an interesting moment. But I do like that you can change your looks. I thought that was pretty clever that you had to change your look into a guard in order to get around some of the areas and the doors, pass some guards, some Dragonia guards.
Yeah, I liked when you did have to change into NPCs that were dead, and that was like, it was like, oh, like that's like some sort of like Meet Joe Black type shit right there. That's kind of a grim way to advance the story. Mark, it sounds like you have the most experience in this game of the three of us, but I also kind of like Mike defaulted to refresh kind of being like my spell of choice, but you know I actually really don't know if that's like the best way to go through the game. Like I don't know if I like didn't take enough advantage of the spells, like I don't know. Telepathy, like, do you even use that as a spell? Is that just like an innate ability that once you have it, like, you can talk to like animal characters? I was very unclear with that because I never used it once as a spell.
You can use it to talk to the wise men to get points, tips at some points in the game, or if you're stuck, they'll give you like a not very clear direction on where to go, which was typical of NES titles back in the day. But I use boost a lot, like because the game is restricted to the NES controller of two buttons. If you use the jump boots, you lost your ability to do magic. But I used the boots a lot, like especially on Mount Saber, jumping up them ice slides or ramps or whatever they are.
Oh, the rabbit boots. Yeah. The rabbit boots. Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as playing the game, being stuck on the NES controller, hampered by that controller, left to a lot of sword switching in dungeons because you'd come across enemies that were the wind sword wouldn't work on them, but the fire sword would. But you also on that same screen, there were enemies that were weak to the other sword, so you were constantly hopping in and out of the sub screen to switch weapons to hit the enemies. But I think that's just an artifact of when the game came out. But other than that, I found the game... The thing I really like about the game is how responsive and fast it is to play. Like, when you want to move a direction or move around an enemy or or swing the sword, it's instant. So that makes... That play control makes the game much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I would say that the moment-to-moment combat is pretty good. Like you said, the whole switching in between swords, especially when you have multiple enemies of different types on the same screen, is wicked annoying. It's incredibly annoying for me. But the adventure is that you have to go out and find four different swords. So there's a wind sword, a water sword, a fire sword, and a lightning sword. That's right?
Thunder. Should have been hearts. You become a Captain Planet at the end. That would have been a fantastic twist. But yeah, like, I mean, actually, you know, it's like funny, and you know, I think this is a callback to like a random game, like where I think of like, so I don't have a problem going to a sub menu to switch swords. It's that like, you know, so each sword has like a corresponding orb or bracelet, and you have to switch that as well, or else like you don't get the charge shot. Whereas like I was like, why can't it just like all switch at once? And it made me actually think of Scourge Hive, like when you played that, where it's like you didn't like how, like, you know, you go into a room, like it doesn't bother me when you go into a room and there's like a lot of like rock paper scissor type elements of like attacks you have to use against enemies, but like I want to be able to like switch like a little bit more like seamlessly, like on the fly. And I think even for like 1990, I was like, my only problem there is like, all right, why do I have to switch the sword and the bracelet? Why can't I just do it like once and just have it all?
I will say, once I got the bracelet and not the ball, like the upgraded sword, I most of the time wouldn't even turn that on because I didn't want to eat into the magic. So I just left it off.
You're talking about the warrior bracelet, the one where you don't have to charge your shot.
No, so there's three. So you charge up your sword to three different levels.
Right.
The first level is like a tiny projectile. The second level is like a wider projectile, and the third level is typically like a screen killer of a projectile.
Yeah. Oh, you mean how you wouldn't try to be on the second shot? Is what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. So I wouldn't even equip that. If you don't equip it, it just has two charges.
Which I didn't find out until my latest playthrough of the game, and I've been playing the game for 30 years. And it was just on my last playthrough. I was like, hey, if you don't equip the bracelet, it still gives you the first two charges.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh my god, that was so fun. Oh my god, I can't believe I just found that out right now.
I figured that out in like the last couple hours, so that's what I ended up doing. But yeah, once you do find the warrior bracelet, which is pretty hidden in the game, it gives you a free one charge, which is pretty sweet. And then you blast guys, just blasting guys. In the last like couple hours of the game, felt really good to have the lightning sword and the warrior ring just fucking murder so many guards outside of Goa to level up level 16.
Yeah, I felt once I got the warrior ring, and this is going to ultimately lead to a question that I'm going to have for Mark, who's clearly a veteran of this game, is that I felt like there was so much cryptic, frustrating stuff that I was experiencing up until I got the warrior ring. It was like, what to do next, and backtracking, and this and that. It's like, once I got that, I was like, yes, I am just going to like slap the shit out of everybody. It's going to feel very therapeutic and refreshing. So, Mark, I have to ask, for the amount of time that you've been playing this, did you like trial and error your way through like some like the really more cryptic parts of this game, or did you like always use like a guide or a mix of both? Like how did you do it? That's all I want to know.
Especially back in the day when we were 13.
I don't remember how my brother and I, we're both very, very avid gamers, and actually I sent him that YouTube video on how Crystallis is pronounced with all caps. We were pronouncing it right all along. And he was pretty happy about that. And I don't remember how we beat, if we had both GamePro and Nintendo Power subscriptions.
I was gonna say, I bet there was like some Nintendo Power or GamePro guides. GamePro guides, I bet.
So it was one of those magazines we got a guide to play that game and finish it with. My most recent playthrough, I didn't remember everything, so I used the internet.
Yeah, there's a site that's like Mike's RPG Center or something.
That's like the page I have open right now.
I was going to say, I bet we all used it. I bet we all use that.
Praise be to the god, Mike's RPG Center. By the way, speaking of god, did you all know that this game in Japan was known as God's Lair, Sonata of the Faraway Skies?
I did know that.
That's a wild name compared to Crystallis.
I knew that because I did research for this episode, you see.
Nice.
I didn't know what it meant.
We would have had no confusion over how to pronounce that.
Yeah.
Before we get into the ranking conversation, there's a couple things that I found out about this game. So, one of the things that the Game Boy Color version does change, and we were just talking about, every sword causes damage to every enemy in that game.
Oh.
In the Game Boy Color version.
Does it cause damage to the horrible music?
I don't know, but it's,
The music, I have... Being such a fan of this, I purchased the Game Boy Color version off of eBay about 5 years ago, having never played it before, but very excited to play this on my Game Boy Advance SP. Turned it on and turned it right off because that music was just wrong. It sounds like something out of Double Dragon or something. It was just wrong music. I don't,
it's pretty bad. I think the NES version is pretty good, except like that overworld theme plays so fucking much. It got really annoying after I was like 8 hours into the game. I was like,
so
I was like, oh my god, stop it.
That Miles Faber music kind of hits though.
There's one theme. It's like a little bit of like a heavier theme. That's like in some of the caves. That piece of music is awesome. I thought actually there was a lot of good music in the game. I didn't think.
I agree.
So the composer for Crystalis, which I now have to get used to saying, is Yoko Osaka, and she looks like she like I looked up like some of her other work in. Looks like she didn't have a long career in the video game industry. It was about 6 years, and most of it was like arcade games. Like she did like some. Well, she also did like some like Fatal Fury ports and stuff like that. But for Nintendo games, she only did this, Akari 3, Touchdown Fever, and Guerrilla War, which I think is like the Akari Warriors clone, where you play as Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, which I think is what that is. So.
It's either that or POW. It's either POW or Guerrilla War. I think it's Guerrilla War.
Well, it's Guerrilla War. No, POW is a different game. But she also did the soundtrack for the arcade POW game. But no, the NES POW game is a different game. But yeah, that's a very odd ball shooter.
So, yeah. We should play that. In Japan, you're actually Che Guevara, which is pretty funny.
I have that like on a flash card, but I was like, oh boy. At first I thought it was like a ROM hack, and then I looked it up and was like, no, this is real. But that's another pod for another time. So
And then also the Game Boy Color version of Crystalis is has a smaller field of view because the resolution of the Game Boy Color was different. So like guys can shoot you from off screen and you won't even see them. Because like in this game,
favorite video game mechanic right there.
Yeah. So there's smaller field of view, and I thought even in the NES version, which had a pretty expansive field of view, sometimes the guys would see up to on you because they'd be coming towards you as you were walking towards the screen moving forward. I thought that was sometimes an issue, but yeah, the PC version is it's really difficult because it's a smaller screen. It was also retranslated for the GBC version, so there's like additional cutscenes, and they flesh out the story a little bit better than the next one. I think they changed up to, there's like some aspect of it. I think in that version, you're the hero of prophecy, and in the NES version, I believe the sages wake you up. So, whereas opposed to the GB version, they don't wake you up. Wake up, and there's like a twist in the story that changes the actual story a little bit in the GBC version. So that was interesting. There's also, I guess, Kensu and Asina are nods to.
Oh, I was just about to say this. Well, they're not ties to King of Fighters characters.
Yeah, and also Psycho Soldier and Athena. They're both in Psycho Soldier. Athena is from Athena. Asina is from Athena. But they would go on to be King of Fighters characters, which I thought was interesting. That's a series I would love to cover in the future on the podcast, as I'm a burgeoning fighting game expert because of this podcast.
Hit me with that subtle world building. I like that shit.
It's pretty cool. but yes, our ranking discussion is here. Mark, are you ready to participate in ranking game on the endless list?
Yeah. Well, I've had nothing to do with the other games in the list, so
I don't. Well, let me. So this is a unique scenario. We didn't really address it, but you are you're a brand new voice to the show, a listener turned co-host. So I'm going to do something a little bit different. I will say the things that I don't like about this game are like, if I did not have a guide to play this game, I would probably get so frustrated working through this game. And the only other like real thing I would say I don't like about the game is the I felt like the hit detection can be a little suspect at times. And we didn't really touch on it Anything that casts you with fucking paralysis or flies, I fucking hate. I hate with a passion.
There was a middle section of this game where, I would say just after like the midway point, where literally everything that touched you gave you a status effect, and it got so effing annoying. Whether it was either paralysis or what's the other one that they poison, or sometimes it'd petrify you if they're Medusas or stuff like that. That got really, really annoying.
But I can be upsold on this game with a good sales pitch of a sister Y to ignore those.
For an NES game, if we're looking at this NES game and comparing it to other NES games on this list, I think this is a very solid game. I mean, it's an action RPG. It's in the vein of, it's like a Zelda was turned into an RPG. It's like it got those two things going for it. I would say too, it's like, if you look at the gameplay behind a game like Ys, which is like another game that's in this vein, I think that this gameplay is actually a little bit more fun, because you have you have a charge shot and you're shooting guys, as opposed to those easy games where you're just kind of running into guys. The gameplay, that's
no
story.
No, I hear that. I have a port original NES Ys, but I've not played it. I've played other Ys games.
There's also, I would also say too that I think they over relied on caves for the dungeon design, as it's just a palette swap of the caves for like 5% of the dungeon in this game. That's a little bit rough. I think when it changed up the swamp and the castle, it felt so refreshing to get away from the caves.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
yeah,
finally.
I would guess at some point that's a memory thing, but.
The dungeon design didn't bother me. I thought the game was a bit grindy in the beginning, and then it kind of ended abruptly with that level cap, which kind of, it's like there's the level cap and then there's the end, which is, it just closes out kind of fast for me right now. There's nothing really fleshed out when you get to that tower. You just kind of have the super sword, go to the top, kill the Contra-like final boss, because that final boss reminded me of the second boss in Contra.
Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden
looks like Jackie O, the last boss of Ninja Gaiden. But yeah, it's weird too, like, speaking of bosses, the that boss and the swamp boss, I think, are the only, like, big giant, and the dragon. The only big giant, like, bosses that are super impressive. Unless I'm missing somebody. The rest of them are just, like, guys that shoot stuff at you.
Or the ball bounces around.
I like that like cool looking general guy that you fight him twice. He's like one of like the four, not the four fiends, but were they like the four fantastic, four magnificent? I don't know. They have some like quirky, not Sinister Six or Four Fiends type name. He's like, oh, we're like the four fucking great. I don't know. It was something like that, but I liked that guy's design. I did not like, especially the second time, I did not like fighting him, but
General Kelly was cool with that.
Yes, that guy. The general.
Yes. I always think of Kafka when I saw his name for some reason. I did, at the end of the day, after playing this game, I liked it. I thought it was weird that you get to level 16, which seems rather arbitrary, and you have to get to level 16 in order to beat the final boss, because otherwise you won't take damage. And then you can't level up after that, like, you just, no experience pops up. Felt really weird when that happened. I was like, why am I not getting experience anymore?
Yeah, I think from 2020 perspective, that does seem weird, but in 1990, they were just figuring this stuff out. So adding the RPG elements to a game like, to a top-down adventure game like Zelda, and having the halfway fleshed out story it does, and just I think these are things that the video game developers just were just figuring out at the time, and just got better with as the years went on. I don't have any experience with the Ease game on NES, so I can't. Does that have a level cap in it?
I'm not sure. I don't think I think either of us played it. It's just similar playing game in terms of the gameplay mechanics. But I would say that, you know, the Dragon Quest games, one of the reasons why they're so popular in Japan when they came out is because they allowed salarymen to play, and no matter how good they were at the game, they could just grind and then eventually beat the game, and that was nice. That's why JRPGs became so popular, is they were a form of entertainment where anybody, you didn't have to have finger dexterity like Super Mario Brothers in order to beat the game. You just had to put in time and have patience. And that's why people gravitate towards them. And that's like why people think that people gravitate towards them. When they were making this game, which is a Japanese developed game, I'm curious why they were like, let's up at 16 and make it so that you can't get any better in order to defeat this bad guy. But I would say they do give you at the last town, you can buy as many magic rings as you want, as your inventory can spare, I'd say. So that if you, which I did, I maxed out my inventory with magic rings at the end of it. I kept one of Fruit of Rupun because I was like, this final boss or one of these bosses is going to turn me into a monster. I just know it. And he did. And I had that Fruit of Rupun to turn myself back, fortunately. But all the other slots were filled with magic rings to replenish my MP.
You weren't strong enough at level 16?
No, it was weird. I thought it was fine, but like when you enter those caves and you see, or the pyramid, and you see like the scorpions, if I'm at the max level, it shouldn't take like 5 hits to kill them, you know? Still, at the end of the game, you should be like killing those things with 2 hits, but that's just me. I also felt like one of those bosses, and that last area had like a boss gauntlet. I forget which one, but one of the bosses at the end, and I think it was the Emperor, the last Emperor, he was like a HP sponge. Like I had to hit him like a million fucking times to kill him. And I don't know why they did that, but
you know, I thought it was fine. Because like the end game is so quick, I guess like, you know, it seems like, I guess like Mark said earlier, like it seems like it kind of ends abruptly. Like I think I actually kind of enjoyed that for like, I feel like the middle part of the game was like a bit of a slog at times. Like Dragonia Castle, that's where you have the boss rush. It's a boss gauntlet because like they all kind of come back with like new abilities and whatnot. So it's not really a rush. But that part I was like, okay. I was like, this is hard, this is difficult, that's like a trudge to get through. And then I like it when it's like the end game is like quicker. That was like a nice satisfying way to wrap the game up. Because there were times I was like getting, like when you're in the Angry Sea part and then Dragonia Castle, like those two parts, I was like, oh man, I was like, this is a, I don't know, I wouldn't call it, I don't know, it just felt maybe tedious a little bit. But then it was nice when it's like that last back end of the game is very abrupt. I didn't even fight one scorpion. I just blew all past them because I said, whatever, I'm already maxed out. I got nothing to gain by fighting these scorpions. And you can shoot right to the end boss pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. And you also get the power of flight. So you can go over rivers and cut around things. It felt so good. Or like shortcut half the dungeon and just go over the water. I was like, oh, my God, this is great.
I think that there's a portion of this game where you ride a dolphin.
Yeah, there is. You
spend about, I don't know, 10% of the game riding a talking dolphin and just doing everything you can do. Not on the dolphin, but on the dolphin.
He felt whenever I got off him and he said, he's like, I'll see you later. I always thought it was really sad. He's like, I want to hang out with you.
I was like, is something gonna happen to this fucking dolphin? Like, what's his fucking story? But
that was fun. The dolphin was pretty fun. I'll give you that.
So, Mark, if you are looking at our list, Mark, why don't you? I don't know what's smarter to say to give us the floor or to give us the ceiling.
So one thing I'll say is that one thing we like to do reviews if you like to look at comparative games on the list. So I think that makes it easier. And so if you look at just the NES games on the list, for example, you got Castlevania at 33, you've got Dragon Warrior at 41, you've got DuckTales at 45, Bubble Bobble at 49, River City Ransom at 50.
In the beginning, I kind of threw out a couple of games that I thought were in the same realm of quality as this. DuckTales and River City Ransom, you have those at 45 and 52. If you look farther down the list, you have Kung Fu. And this game is better than Kung Fu.
I personally think that this game is more expansive than Kung Fu, for example. I think Kung Fu is a very simple game, but I think it's and very fun. But I think that this game is a more expansive game than Kung Fu.
Let me look. Processing here.
Or the basement.
I mean, this game is definitely better than Rampage, for example.
Chris. Where is Rampage?
Rampage is number 63 on this currently.
You know, this is why I always say we need to have our personal list. But, all right, so if we are looking around, maybe I will not die on the Rampage Hill.
Mark, just so you know, River City Ransom is a bingy of Chris's. It's one of his favorite children on the list.
Well, I think putting River City Ransom way down at 52 is some kind of sin, but in my personal opinion. But
you know, that was like one of the first probably 12 episodes we ever did in this podcast. So at some point in time, it did exist in the top 10 at some point in time. Listen, Mark, I lose a lot of battles on this podcast, or concede a lot of spots, I think is what I do. But Mark,
Mark, do you think that this game, Crystalis, is a better game than Ishigami?
That's a tough one, because I really enjoy both of those games, and I consider finishing Ninja Gaiden back in the day one of my top video game achievements, because that game is ridiculously hard.
Yeah, it is.
I could not finish it nowadays. My hands are old.
aren't all of us.
It's tough. That's a tough one. It's like right there with River City Ransom. I consider like River City Ransom, to me personally, is like Crystalis. Is like it takes a different type of game, like a Zelda game, and adds RPG elements. Whereas River City Ransom took like Double Dragon and added RPG elements. So they're both like kind of cut from the same cloth in that aspect. But River City Ransom is a superior game as far as the legacy it has created. I was just playing River City Girls, which is available on the Game Pass right now. And that's a really fun game, where Crystalis doesn't have the legacy that the River City Ransom has.
Chris, he's talking about legacy. He's on Team Mike. Team Mike, let's go!
Have you played Spider-Man 2 on the PS2, Xbox, or GameCube, or probably PC?
I have not.
Hmm.
What game are we talking about?
Spider-Man 2. I would say...
I've been reading a lot about it lately because I'm currently in the middle of Miles Morales, but...
I enjoy this game better than Spider-Man 2.
That's wild.
What about Pilot Wings and Kung Fu?
Oh, fuck Pilot Wings. Yeah. I don't give a shit. Once we clear the Spider-Man 2 wall, we're going to roll down the hill a little bit here. Fuck Pilot Wings. I wasn't on that episode. I have nothing to say for that. But Toe Jam and Earl, though?
Yeah, that's dope music.
Toe Jam and Earl. Toe Jam and Earl is kind of where I hit my next block, and then I definitely hit a block at Ninja Gaiden.
I think a good spot for this game, just to call it out, would be like either number 58 or 57. Because, and I think it goes at 58 because of the legacy of Diablo is a little bit, is a lot greater than Chrysalis. I just think that this is a more fun game than Kung Fu and a bigger experience and impressive for 1990 video game.
Go ahead, Mark.
In my attempt to do homework before coming on the podcast, I stared at your list for a good 10 minutes and placed my bet where I thought I could argue Chrysalis going, and right between Diablo and Kung Fu is where I told myself I could possibly be successful.
Oh, well.
That's good.
Yeah, I would, that's really good. I think that's fair. There's a lot of, there was things I found frustrating about Chrysalis, and but I think the fact that it is doing unique things, like from a story standpoint, like I do like that it's like a weird, like the world ends in the distant future of 1997, and then like and then like get thrown back to the fantasy world, and then go, and then you, at the end of the game, you come full circle. You find out you're a scientist, and you're kind of back in this like future area. Like, really, I don't know, really unique stuff, I think, for Nintendo, especially at that time, which to me would put it above Kung Fu. I never really played Diablo, so I don't really, have a preference whether it was above Diablo or not. But
do you know that this game was originally scheduled to be ported to the Neo Geo? I didn't mention this because I forgot to write it down, but I was reading that there were plans to port this to Neo Geo, and there were plans to make a sequel for the Neo Geo. And I feel like if that had happened, this game would have gone higher on our list. But because SNK as a company decided to change gears, if you will, and really double down on arcade business and basically make an arcade in your home, the Neo Geo, in 1990, this game kind of got tossed by the wayside. And it was like, it's that's why it's kind of hidden gem as it is, because directly after this game came out, that's when you started seeing the Art of Fighting and Fate of Fury series getting made. I think those games came out in 1992 or 93, and they had they were probably being worked on when the game was shipped, and then you had like, you know, all those solid arcade experiences that SNK started to make. So this is a very, very interesting point in history for SNK for me. And I knew about this game. I knew it was a hit gem a couple years ago, but it really got a light shined on it for me when the SNK 40th anniversary collection came out, which for people out there who are into video game history, is a very, very cool product because it has a lot of like concept art in it. It has like a lot of really weird SNK games that aren't the games you think about when you think of SNK. It's not the fighting games. It's not the Metal Slug games. It's or like Windjammer, the games from the 90s. Games from the 80s that you might not like, but they're super interesting. They came out and they're like this weird alternative pocket of history that most people don't know about for SNK.
A hot tip, right, is if you have Amazon Prime and the Amazon Gaming on your PC, that SNK 40th Anniversary Collection is available for free.
Is it available right now?
Yep, on Amazon Gaming, along with a whole bunch of SNK fighters. They have a whole huge list of SNK games.
Yeah, is that the Twitch thing when you tie your Twitch to Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. My brother told me to download it on my PC, and I downloaded it, and Amazon Gaming is the...
Okay.
Yeah, Amazon Gaming.
I get it through Twitch. Because if you tie your Twitch to Amazon Prime, because Amazon owns Twitch, you get a bunch of free games every month. So I have them there as well. I forgot I had it on there. Should have told people about that. Just opening it up. I've like actually, since I tied that in like 2 years ago, I've gotten like like 100 games for free that are just for free in perpetuity, which is pretty cool. If you're tired, and we're doing a non-paid promotion of Twitch and Amazon right now on the podcast.
Yeah, well, we should hit them up for money. We should hit them up for this advertisement. Yeah.
Jeff Bezos, we're coming for you. We're coming for you, Jeff. Do we want to put this at number 58? Is that cool? Can we do that?
I'm good with that. I could not go above Toe Jam and Earl. Toe Jam and Earl is like a nice White Claw and a Benadryl, relaxing sensation to me. And, you know, it's hard to beat that.
All right. Mark, you okay with number 58?
I'm happy that my pre-show prediction is coming true. So, yeah.
All right. Cool. So we have a new number 58, and that's the game we had. It is a Crystallis. It's our 104th entry on the endless list. Congratulations to Crystallis. And I do want to thank you, Mark, for being on the podcast.
Trespass got that much worse. Got that much worse.
It did. Every week. And I want to thank you, Mark, for coming on. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, maybe we can do this again someday.
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. All right, guys.